Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
When the pandemic began, I did end up taking on much more of the childcare and household responsibilities.
I never signed up to be a stay-at-home mom. I certainly didn't sign up to be a stay-at-home mom while also working full-time. And that's pretty much what's happened. That was not our agreement when we had kids.
It's like there's no separation of stress anymore. It's exhausting to balance roles when you're constantly on, being a mom, wife, coworker, daughter to aging parents.
We're hitting our breaking point. There's no end in sight with me working from home. Doesn't feel like there's an end in sight with this pandemic. And we're realizing that what we're doing right now is not sustainable for our family.
Well, does all that sound familiar? I'll admit it more than rings a bell for me, the plight of working mothers in this pandemic. Now look, even though some progress has been made, mothers still bear the disproportionate responsibility when it comes to holding together the household. And for working single mothers, they're bearing all of that alone. Now, with the pandemic, what little divide there was between work and home, job and family, is gone. So what is that doing to women? What long-term impact will it have on the families and the communities that rely on them? This hour on Point, the lives of working mothers in the COVID-19 pandemic. And we'll begin today by hearing firsthand what it's like, what it's been like for one mom. Joining us from Bridgeport, Connecticut is Romina Pacheco. She's a consultant for an educational nonprofit agency. She's also the mother of two young children. Romina, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you.
Okay, so first of all, just describe to us, what is a typical day like for you?
I don't know if I can say what a typical day is anymore, to tell you the truth, in this, what's being called the new normal. It's pretty much managing what's in front of me in the moment. So starting with, depending on the mood my children woke up with, I have a toddler, 2-year-old, and an 11-year-old who is going into sixth grade. So it really it starts by taking care of them, hoping that everything, their basic needs at the very least, are covered before 9 a.m. when I normally have to start my first professional meeting over Zoom. So it's really trying to take care of everything and in some ways say a prayer that, you know, the 2-year-old is not having a meltdown when I have to log in and be a professional. So, and then, you know, I go on to do my work the best way I can through the working hours. Of course, having kids at home 24/7 poses a challenge to that. Many times it's not possible to actually complete my work during the working hours. So it means making dinner, again, taking care of children and the house and the home and everything that needs to happen to make the house more or less function. And then once they're in bed, continue to do my work in the middle of the night. So that's been a very, this is why I say that there's not really a typical day, because it's really going to depend on so many moving targets.
I hear you. More than you know, Romina, I hear you. So if I may ask, do you have a partner or a spouse? I mean, tell us a little bit more about the supports that you might have to get through each of these non-typical days.
Yes, I do have a spouse. I'm married and we live in the same, you know, household. Mm-hmm. And obviously we do share the task of a spouse who also has a full-time job, I should say, and that is also working from home. We're both, we're pushed to working from home when the pandemic, you know, first hit, back in mid-March. Since mid-March, we have been both working from home. And we do share the task of, you know, taking care of children and managing the house. But there was an article that came out in the New York Times back in May that talked about a survey that they did to moms and dads around homeschooling. And in the survey, the men, about half, 50% of the men said that they helped out more with homework. And only 3% of the women agreed with that statement. And when I read that article, my response was, I believe the 97% of the women who actually disagreed with the men taking the lead or at least taking the majority of the work when it comes to homeschooling, specifically based on my own experience, right? So not to necessarily throw my husband under the bus, because it would be unfair for me to say that he doesn't do anything, because that is not accurate. The truth is that I cannot tell you in terms of number of quantifying, although I think if I did, I would make a pretty strong case. But I do feel that the bulk of the work falls on my shoulders. Like the other day, for instance, I had a workshop to teach that ended at 6:30, right? 6:30 p.m. So I was hiding in my room like I normally do be quiet and be able to focus on my work. And 6:35, 6:40 p.m., I come out of the room and there they are looking at me and asking me what's for dinner. And obviously I had just come out of work, from doing that all day. When I know when my husband, for instance, has to do that, there is no, the kids are not looking at him to ask him what's for dinner, right?
Right.
I'm already taking care of it. I already made that decision. It's already in the works. If they're not fed already by that time.
Right. So can I just jump in here, Romina, just for a second? Because the example that you give, I imagine there are many, many women right now hearing it saying, absolutely, they're raising their hands and being like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Because, I agree with you, like, we're not going to throw spouses under the bus here or partners under the bus, because that's not the point of this hour. But it's just to sort of address some realities. And that is, just in the act of mothering or the state of motherhood, there are just some things that some presumptions. I mean, like my kids do the same thing. If they have the choice on who to call who to call out for when they need help, the word mama comes out before the word dada comes out, no matter what I'm doing, even if I'm on the radio talking to you. and so that there's just sort of an innate expectation of accessibility and an innate expectation that mothers are going to be the ones who are managing the household regardless of what their professional or working demands are. That perhaps there isn't that expectation for spouses or partners. So what impact has that had on you? I mean, like, I can't imagine that you feel like you're at your best in any aspect of your life right now.
No, none of that. And you just actually said something that has been really emotional for me through this whole process. And it's feeling exactly that I'm not doing a good job in any area of my existence. You know, I'm like, I'm not being a good mom because I'm not really 100% there. So, you know, at least I feel that way, right? To support with my daughter's school, for instance, it was a struggle for her to have to do distance learning. You know, she wasn't used to it. She missed everything. It was a struggle, right? Just to put it simple. And I couldn't necessarily, I tried to support her the best way I could, but I know that there are things that I could have done better if I had had more time, if I had more the emotional capacity in the moment, you know, to do it. But I was being pulled in so many different directions that it was very challenging for me to just give her the full attention that she deserved and that needed in the moment, right? So it was only like splitting myself to help her a little bit, and then having the toddler, you know, crying for whatever toddlers, you know, cry and have meltdowns about, through the day, and then thinking about, oh my goodness, I haven't finished that report, or I have that meeting, in 5 minutes. that, oh, I'm late already to a meeting, you know, those sort of things. And then forget about my spouse, you know. If something falls to the bottom of the list, I do have to acknowledge that it's him, because everything else seems so pressing. You know, you're behind in laundry, you're not cooking your best meals. It's just like feeling like a level of incompetence in every area, mm-hmm. right? And it's tough. And it's I feel like for working, for me particularly, I'm going to speak about my experience. I was already feeling that before the pandemic, that this is not necessarily new experience for me. Like I already felt split, you know, in terms of my interest and my desires being a working mom. But what this pandemic has highlighted has intensified those feelings rather, you know? So things that I already was struggling with, now they become like, I don't know, you know, 10 times more intense.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't be telling this to America, but I'm going to anyway. I've had a good sort of the frequency of my moments where I just tip over and just like have to have that good cry has gone up pretty dramatically because of exactly the things that you're describing. Now, I have to let you go in a minute, Romina, but my last question for you is this sustainable for you, and for your family?
Not at all. It's not sustainable for anybody. I didn't say this, but a couple of months ago, I actually felt like I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I have to reach out for help. And I did find myself doing that because it's just not possible to sustain this kind of lifestyle much longer.
Well, Romina Pacheco, she's the mother of two children and a consultant for the educational nonprofit. Romina, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, and good luck. Keep at it. When we come back, we'll talk more with experts who've been taking a look at motherhood, modern motherhood, and how much harder it's become for working moms in the middle of this pandemic. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the plight of working mothers in this pandemic and the long-term impact that the difficulties and challenges that working moms are facing, the long-term impact that'll have on them, their families, and the communities that rely on them. Now, we heard a lot from listeners when we said that we were going to do this hour. For example, here's Katie from Libertyville, Illinois, and she says it's been 3 weeks since her 9-month-old and 4.5-year-old kids have returned to their daycare center. So some progress there. But the months of working from home and taking care of her children have already taken its toll on her and her husband.
We are very fortunate to work from home, but we are very, very burnt out. And the hardest part right now that our kids are back at daycare, is feeling that there's no right choice. It's inevitable that there will be another resurgence, and it's very, very likely there'll be cases in our child's daycare and that they'll be back at home and we'll be back to where we were. We've had more family time than we ever would have imagined. But what do we do about the burnout now?
That's Katie from Libertyville, Illinois. Well, joining us now is Jessica Calarco. She's an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University, and she researches inequalities in education and family life. Professor Calarco, welcome to the program.
Meghna, thanks for having me.
So you heard my conversation in the previous segment with Romina, and I wonder how indicative do you think the stories that we've been hearing are of basically what is already a reality for working mothers? Have their lives become even more challenging because of this pandemic, and or are we I'm a little slow off the mark today. But are we basically, is what is being revealed a truth that was already there about those inequities?
Sure. And so certainly Romina's story and the other stories that we've heard so far this hour are so consistent with what I'm finding in my own research and what others are finding in theirs as well. Pre-pandemic, I was doing research following a group of about 250 moms with young kids from pregnancy through the first few years of their kids' lives, checking in every 6 months with surveys and interviews about the challenges they were facing and decisions they were making about things like vaccines and screen time and when to go back to work. And when the pandemic hit, we were still doing interviews, still doing surveys, and it became clear that all these changes were taking a huge toll on moms and their families, and especially on families with working moms. Among the working moms in our study, 88% say that they're more stressed now than before the pandemic, compared to only about 66% of moms who were not working pre-pandemic. Moms who are working now are also twice as likely as stay-at-home moms to be getting less sleep than they were pre-pandemic. And working moms are about 15% more likely than stay-at-home moms to say that the pandemic is leading to things like more frustration with their kids and more frustration with their spouses. And it seems that those differences between working moms and stay-at-home moms are driven by the fact that moms, and especially working moms, have taken on a substantial increase in the childcare responsibilities now that things like schools and childcare facilities are closed. 55% of the moms in our study say they're spending a great deal more time with their kids now during the pandemic compared to only about 20% of stay-at-home moms. And that's consistent with other studies as well. One recent study from Boston Consulting Group of dual career couples found that working moms have increased their housework and childcare hours from about 35 hours a week to about 65 hours a week during the pandemic, while working dads in those same couples increased their hours from 25 hours to 50 hours a week. So dads may have a bigger percentage increase in their housework and in their childcare hours, which may lead to, Romina was talking about that New York Times piece where dads perceive themselves as doing more work. But really moms, the data consistently show that working moms have increased their work hours by more hours, and they're still doing about 15 hours a week more than their partners, even in the same households.
Right. I mean, this is one of those circumstances in which percentages don't match reality, right? Because you can go from 1 hour to 2 hours and that's 100% increase. But if you're already doing 10 hours of additional work, even a couple hours on top of that is a lot. You see what I'm saying? Like the absolute hours really matter here. And that's the reality that mothers are always facing, have already been facing. Now, you know, okay, who working mothers are in this country is a spectacularly diverse group of women we're talking about. What has your research shown? Let's drill down on two particular groups. Have you been able to follow what's been happening to, say, single mothers who are also working? Because they have to deal with 100% of the responsibility of the household already. And I cannot imagine how challenging it's been for them in the pandemic.
Absolutely. So single moms, certainly pre-pandemic and now, are dealing with a tremendous amount of stress, having to negotiate. And oftentimes they're the ones who are most reliant on extended family members and in order to help provide care. There's actually research pre-pandemic showing that married working moms and single working moms don't actually spend a different amount of time on childcare. And actually married working moms spend more time on housework than single working moms do, in part because of different standards and things like that. But certainly that's in part because single parents are often heavily reliant on extended family in order to be able to manage the logistics of providing care for their kids or dealing with unexpected things that come up at work. And that's been especially challenging during the pandemic, especially for moms who are worried about putting their extended family members at risk. If they regularly rely on grandma for childcare, for example, that for some of the moms that we've talked to has been a really difficult choice. And some of the parents that we've talked to, even mothers who are married and do have a partner, are continuing to rely on grandparent care just because it's the only way for them to be able to make ends meet in terms of just getting everything done.
Yeah. And then sort of layered on top of that, I'm also thinking of mothers who are also essential workers and don't have the option to even bring their work home, right? They have to find some way to get their kids looked after. They had to fill in the gaps for school, and they couldn't do it from home as well.
Absolutely. And that's certainly the case with especially the healthcare workers that we've talked to and the retail workers as well. The healthcare workers that are still going into hospitals or other types of healthcare settings are primarily relying on grandparents as caregivers, especially if their spouse or partner also works outside the home. And in some cases, especially retail workers, some of them have opted to or have almost been forced out of their jobs because they can't afford to, especially the low-income moms who were working in retail, ultimately had to leave their jobs because they either didn't want to put a grandparent at risk or didn't have access to other childcare. One mom I talked to, for example, her husband was a nurse and he was working outside the home, and she had a job in retail, and she was furloughed during the early part of the pandemic. But when her boss told her that she could come back to work, she didn't have anyone to care for her 1-year-old daughter. Her childcare facility was closed, and so she ultimately ended up quitting her job instead. And that took a huge toll on her mental health.
Yeah.
This mom had suffered with severe postpartum depression following the birth of her daughter, and going back to work initially had helped her tremendously in the recovery process. And when I talked to her back in May, she'd been out of work again for almost 2 months, and she was already starting to feel the depression and anxiety starting to creep back in with being the only one at home and not having a lot of social support. So I think it's even when moms are being pushed out of the workforce, there's still a tremendous amount of stress there, too.
Without a doubt. And by being pushed out of the workforce, they've lost that income. There are still tens of millions of Americans without work right now. So as and when and if the economy begins to recover, it may be even harder for these moms to get back in the labor force, to get back into work. So I can see the sort of the domino effect, the long-term domino effect this is having on women and their families. But let's just listen for a second to another On Point listener. This is Carrie from New York. And Carrie told us that the childcare responsibility in her house has fallen to her husband in recent months, but having to focus on work has come with its own set of challenges.
I stayed home with my daughter for the first almost 2 years of her life and freelanced throughout that and, you know, really just went back to work full time in November. And when the pandemic started, my husband lost his job, so he became a full-time caregiver. He, to be completely honest, struggled with it for a really long time, you know, and it was still a struggle for me because I stayed home with my daughter. I had such a strong bond with her, and she wanted me, and she, you know, wanted to be comforted by me, and I had to say no, or I had to stay upstairs and listen to her cry down here and scream for mama or whatever. And that was, it continues to be really hard.
Well, that's On Point listener Carrie from New York. Professor Calarco, if you can just hang on here for a second, I want to now bring into the conversation Danny McLean. Danny's a contributor at The Nation and a fellow with the Type Media Center. In April, she wrote an op-ed about her experience as a single working mom during the pandemic. Danny is also author of We Live for the We, The Political Power of Black Motherhood. Danny McLean, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna.
And thank you, by the way, for your patience in listening to this discussion so far, Danny. So you wrote that op-ed back in April. How has it been since April through until now?
One thing I keep coming back to as I think about what it means to be a parent at this moment is how much pressure is put on individual families because of the level of chaos at the top. There's been such a lack of a consistent message from our federal government, which means that the weight of decision making has fallen so much on us as individual families. And that's really why I wrote that piece back in early April. And really, at that point, it was because the public health guidance that we were getting, like all these articles about, well, you know, stay at home means no play dates and, you know, stay at home means no dinner parties. They were, you know, people were kind of offering us tips on how to stay safe. But I noticed that no one was talking about what to do if your family exists across multiple households. And that was my situation then as now. I actually prefer the phrase unpartnered parent because, and this goes to something that Professor Calarco was talking about. I don't really feel like a single parent because I, you know, have organized my life in such a way that I depend a lot on extended family, particularly my mom, to support me with my one child who's three, she'll be four next month. And so the pandemic really made me question, how am I going to do this? I can't just go in the house and shut the door and survive as the sole caregiver for this child while I'm also trying to work. And so what I did was just reach out to epidemiologists, bioethicists, other parents in my position to figure out, how do we do this? What are we supposed to be doing? And it's kind of gotten easier over time, I'll say, because what's happened is that as we've gotten deeper and deeper into this pandemic, and the kind of restrictions have eased up a bit in some places, for better or worse, more of us are figuring out how to do pods, right? It's like, it's a broader conversation around how do you safely come into contact with people who don't live in your household. My mom and I and my daughter's dad and I, you know, figured that out in March or April, whereas a lot of people just started figuring it out in June. But I think, you know, it's something that depends, that requires a lot of high level communication. And so I've been deep in that work.
Yeah. But it requires a lot of high level communication and then the ability to make the changes that are necessary, that you're talking about here. I mean, there are, as you know, and as we've been discussing, there may be many families and women who just don't have access to that information or even the options. I mean, yeah. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, so just, I want to, you point out that there's a lot of privilege in my position because I live in my hometown. My mother is here. I have extended family. She's retired. I have extended family who's willing and able to support me. I'm also very media literate. So because I am a journalist, I feel really confident that I'm accessing sources that I can trust for accurate and timely news about the virus. I feel pretty able to parse the details and, you know, keep up with the latest research and figure out what that means for my family. And then I also have the privilege of having 7 years of practice of working from home. And then 4 years of practice of balancing working from home and being a parent. So, yeah, I mean, this has been difficult for a lot of families. I just want to introduce the kind of race piece to this if it hasn't been introduced already. So the Washington Post ran this story in March or April. They used data from a Bureau of Labor Statistics survey that showed that just 20% of Black employees and 16% of Latinx employees had the ability to work from home. And that's compared to 37% of Asian American and 30% of white workers. So when we think about who are essential workers, and then, of course, there's a class component as well, right? So only 4% of people who didn't graduate from high school can work remotely. And that's compared to 52% of those with a college degree or higher. So when we think about who's been on the front lines as essential workers, and that means working in food service or healthcare, sanitation, childcare, these are largely Black and brown people who have to figure out, who have had to figure out who's going to keep my kid while I go to work. And so, you know, as Professor Calarco pointed out, single parents have often already, you know, worked out these kind of extended kinship networks or depending on extended family. And yet the pressures of a pandemic and maybe not being able to access elders in our family because we are worried about being asymptomatic and accidentally infecting them with the virus, this has created new complications that folks are trying to sort through.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, I was also thinking of, say, in two-parent households, in African-American families, for example, there are many cases, I imagine, in which the spouse may have, say he lost his job because of the mass unemployment we're seeing in this country now, mm-hmm. and the mother still is working. But then layered on top of that, we have the extant pay gap. Right. There's a mm-hmm. there's a gender pay gap and then a gender and race pay gap. I mean, there was some data from the census. The National Women's Law Center in 2018 compiled some census data that found that black women make 61 cents on the dollar as white males do. So I can imagine that this is setting back families even further if one of the parents has lost their job and they're relying on the suppressed wages of the mom.
That's an excellent point. Thank you for bringing that up. I think the unemployment crisis is hitting families of color and, particularly black families in a very specific way.
Well, Dani McLean, thank you so much for joining us today. Dani McLean works for, she's a writer for The Nation and author of We Live for the We, The Political Power of Black Motherhood. Dani, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with a lot more about discussions of working moms in the pandemic. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we are talking about the realities for working mothers in this pandemic, and we heard a whole lot from listeners about this issue. For example, here's Holly from Juneau, Alaska. Now, she is an emergency room nurse, and she has very keenly felt the responsibility, not only at work, but the responsibility she has at home for taking care of the health of her family during this pandemic.
I am an emergency room nurse with 3 children and an active duty military husband. It's been very, very difficult. And, you know, I'm thankful to have a job, but also obviously worried to bring it home to my family. It's heartbreaking that people don't take this serious. And I feel very betrayed as a healthcare worker that things are getting worse and not better.
That's Holly from Juneau, Alaska. And we also heard from a listener, a mom in Ann Arbor, Michigan, who says that the pandemic has added an element of her role as a parent in that now parents are her children or children's only playmates.
We are the only playmate for our children and feel an immense obligation to keep our children's spirits up. There just isn't a lot of time for us to negotiate our own needs as a couple or to even plan how we're going to divvy up the work. So I feel like there's resentment that builds, and then there's the added feeling of failure about not having attended to that.
That's from an On Point listener in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Jessica Calarco is with us. She's been researching the experience of about 60 mothers. She's been following them during this pandemic. And Professor Calarco, so let's look ahead to the future. because clearly there are challenges right now. But what do you think the long-term impact is going to be on these families with so many additional responsibilities and mothers being stretched? We've heard this hour to the breaking point, they're saying.
Absolutely. I think there's consequences for relationships within families. We heard the caller that you just played talking about the stress in her relationship and potentially with her children. And that's certainly something we're finding in our research as well, with moms experiencing tremendous amounts of frustration when they're trying to balance work and family life and having that come out in their relationships with their kids and with their partners. And then beyond that, we also have to think about the impact on women's careers. We know that taking time off of work or reducing work hours, as research has shown, is happening for working with mothers, especially during this pandemic. It doesn't just hurt women's income in the short term. It sets them back in terms of income and in terms of promotions for the rest of their careers.
For the rest of their careers. And then, I mean, in the millions of families that rely on two incomes to get by, that means that that impact is going to be there on those families for the rest of that woman's career.
Absolutely. And certainly the moms, especially the low-income moms that we've talked to, have been very grateful for the federal benefits, the added unemployment benefits, and also the federal stimulus payments, the added $600 a week and the $1,200 payments that they had received early in the pandemic. But as those payments are due to run out and without extra money, those families are going to be in desperate shape in the weeks and months to come. And so I think thinking about not only what supports do families need in the short term, but also what types of long-term supports need to be put in place in order to help working mothers especially make up for the losses that they'll experience during this pandemic and that the losses that they'll continue to face because of their setbacks during these months or potentially years that we're dealing with this crisis.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. And so let me ask you, whenever the time comes that more and more people are able to return to work, meaning it's not going to be at home anymore for that percentage of folks who are working from home right now, I mean, how are there things that those employers should be thinking about doing? Because it's not, no matter what, I just don't think it's going to be like business as usual when people get to go back into their buildings. But is this an opportunity to actually make changes in work, specifically that help women, which then helps families?
Absolutely. I think we will need more flexibility moving forward as mothers especially transition back into the workplace. Because like you said, I don't think this will be a flip a switch back to business as usual kind of a situation. And as we've seen, many jobs in our economy can be done from home. And certainly women have often been at the forefront of pushing for more flexibility, more workplace policies that would allow time off as needed. Certainly, mothers have been laid off because they, especially low-income mothers, are often at risk of being laid off if they have to take a day off to stay home with their child when they're sick, or they risk having their work hours reduced if their boss doesn't see them as reliable enough to put on the schedule for enough hours. And so thinking about what are the policies, not just what can individual employers do, but what are the federal level policies or state level policies that we can put in place to ensure that workers are guaranteed the flexibility that they need, and especially working moms, to be able to balance having a job and supporting their families, especially for single parents who may not have other sources of incomes, and making sure that they are able to make ends meet for the long term.
And I will say this till the cows come home. Those policies, those flexibility policies, won't just help working moms. They help all families. They help working dads as well, which then because it helps all families, in an ideal situation, it's actually great for the employer as well, because they have happy, more productive workers too. But you know, so there's sort of how people work. There's the ongoing story about wages and wage gaps, particularly when we dig deep into wage gaps across races. So these are actually like concrete policy things that we can accomplish, Professor Calarco. But we've also been hearing this hour endlessly about the home environment, and that what has been made visible is the invisible work of moms at home. And dads, partners and spouses and dads have come a long way. We're going to give them credit, but there's still a lot of change to be done there. How do we affect that change?
Yeah, and I think that's actually a place where it's important to recognize the role of policy as well, in the sense that so much of what we think of as this traditional sort of breadwinner homemaker model of family life is really a construct that came out of policy decisions that we made in the U.S. in the wake of World War II, that we didn't need as many women in the workforce. Millions, 5 million women in the U.S. Joined the workforce during World War II. And the same thing happened in Europe. But following World War II in Europe, and this is from research by historian Stephanie Kuntz, essentially Europe needed women to stay in the workforce after World War II to help with reconstruction efforts. There were enough jobs for everyone, but that wasn't the case in the U.S. And so there was a push to fire the women who had entered the workforce and say that it was more patriotic for women to stay home and to give their jobs back to the men who were returning from the war. And that essentially created this culture of women stay at home and husbands go to work that we still sort of cling to in the stereotypes and ideas that we have today. And that's part of why Europe put in place so many family-friendly policies in many countries, at least certainly not across the board. And it's those policies that have created the conditions that allow for a more equitable sharing of labor between whether it's childcare or housework or paid work between couples in many parts of Europe that we don't see here. And so I think that it points to certainly individual couples can make decisions to share more equitably the kinds of childcare and housework, but putting that just on individual families is really difficult if we live in a society where the policies and the culture don't help support individual couples in making those kinds of decisions.
Yeah, we've just got about 60 seconds left, Professor. My last question for you is, I keep thinking about the emotional impact, because we've heard mothers just in this hour saying, I feel like I'm not doing a good job in any aspect of my life. First of all, that's not true. Moms, you're doing a great yes. job. I'm just going to say that. But how should women be like, taking care of their emotional lives right now?
Absolutely. I think it's okay to settle for good enough right now. I think there is a tremendous amount of pressure placed, especially on moms, to be the super moms. And this comes out of the mommy wars between the stay-at-home moms and the working moms and who's doing it better. And really, I think what we need to be focused on right now is making sure that we are just doing as much as we can without putting pressure on ourselves to make sure our kids get extra or make sure that everything is perfect, that it's okay to let your kids watch TV. That's not going to hurt them in the long term. For getting through this pandemic for parents' sanity.
Well, Jessica Calarco is an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University. Her research is examining the inequalities in both education and family life. Professor Calarco, thank you so very much for joining us this hour.
Thanks. It was great to chat with you.
And just let me reiterate, moms, you are doing a great job. The whole world has changed. Let's listen to how much it's actually changed in the story of another mother. So we want to end this hour hearing from this mom. Her name is
Bev Barnum, B-E-V-B-A-R-N-U-M.
Well, that lilting voice belongs to a Portland, Oregon, 35-year-old mother of two. Barnum is also the founder of the Wall of Moms, the Portland mothers clad in yellow shirts and bike helmets who link arms to form a protective wall between protesters and federal police every night at the Mark Hatfield Courthouse in Portland. Now, prior to founding the Wall of Moms, Bev Barnum had never protested a single day in her life. She was at home late one night a couple of weeks ago, and she started watching videos of the violent clashes in Portland, and then something in her changed. Barnum told us what happened next.
I asked my husband what we could do, like if there was anything that we could do. And he said, oh, well, we could start a fundraiser because they're going to need lawyers and what have you, right? But then he rolled over and went to bed. Like the conversation was over. Very typical. Thank you very much. But I was just laying there like, come on. Like there was this primal like anger in me. So I, by 10 o'clock, I posted on the Portland Working Moms Facebook group asking, well, telling them that I didn't know what I was doing, but I really thought it was time for us as moms to go out there and protect the people that were protesting. A mother asked if I had reached out to the Black community, and I hadn't at that point. So I found Don't Shoot on Instagram, and I messaged them, and I basically told them what I thought I wanted to do and if that was okay. And it was a resounding yes. Thank you. Essentially, we've been waiting for you. I thought that if I could get the moms out there to build a wall between federal officers and protesters, that the federal officers would not attack the protesters. And as you and I now both know, I was very wrong. They did something called a flashbang first. And then they did the gas. I didn't know what gas was. Like, I didn't know what that meant. Within seconds, your face is burning. Your throat is burning. And then you can't see. Like, you lose your eyesight. I don't know for how long, but it felt like an eternity. And the vomiting, it was like an out-of-body experience. It was like I was in one of those war movies. You know how time slows down? It felt like that. And then I could hear again, and people are screaming, run, they're gonna chase you. And I'm vomiting and saying, I'm sorry, I can't see. Like, I'm yelling, I can't see. But I think it was a reporter that helped us. I don't know his name, but he grabbed me by the arm and he said, you need to close your mouth really well because I'm gonna pour baking soda water on you within minutes. I could see again. And then he said, get up and go because they're coming. So we ran like hell. And by the way, they come dressed for war. They're set up to hurt you. They just are. You know, us moms in khakis and dance goes, we don't stand a chance. Yeah, it's like a war zone. When they come out, there's no, like, you're not human. I have two kids. My daughter, especially, when I told her what I planned to do, she flipped out. She was like, wait. She showed me some very harsh videos of law enforcement, like grabbing people and throwing them. And she was like, is that, like, that's what you're putting yourself into? But by the time I got home, they were waiting up. They were like, tell us everything. And I need you to know that I vomited all over myself. And I also lost control of other bodily fluids. So I was a wreck. They saw me walk in the door and my daughter was like, whoa. And she was like, what happened? And I explained it. And she was like, you're going back. You're going back, right? And I was like, yeah, I am. You know, there was a show on TV when I was a kid. It was called Cops. And my parents would watch that. And there was also a show called Jerry Springer. The things that influenced me as a child helped shape a narrative in my brain. And I feel like it helped shape the narrative for the nation. And here we are, just like living with these ingrained biases that we have to like force out, acknowledge, and change. We have to shift our mindset. We were fired up. And we still are. I am blown away by what has happened. It just feels like a wave of positivity and accountability, not only for us as moms waiting so long to pay attention, to do some digging on our own, and to stand up, to come out after our bedtimes and be a peaceful, nonviolent protester in the name of democracy. It's everything I've ever wanted. It's just inspiring. I feel like I'm growing up. I guess that's what it is. I feel like I'm growing up. Like, all these things that I thought I knew about the world and about people are wrong. And I'm learning them outside in the streets. And I can't wait for things to change.
That's Bev Barnum, founder of the Portland Wall of Moms. Bev had a lot more to tell us, more than we could fit into this broadcast. So if you go on over to onpointradio.org, you can listen to the unedited conversation she had with producer Dori Scheimer. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.